I'd like to call the K-12 Finance Committee to order. We don't have a quorum yet, so we'll wait till we get a quorum to approve the minutes. Members could take their seats for the roll. And speaking of rolls, we didn't bring any. But we do have members. We did want to let you know that we have the budget books in front of you that were just put together. And in the budget notebooks, in the first two tabs, you'll see that it's Mr. Crow's age and levy information. And then there is the tabs after that, the tabs on the governor's budget proposal. The additional tabs following are the base budget proposals. Tabs towards the end, members, are dealing with Minnesota State Academies. And the last tab is the Perkins Center for the Arts Education tab. So it's filled with information. It's brought there for your leisure reading. And everybody except the Northern delegation will have a test on the AIDS and levy information tomorrow. So if you're north of the metro, then you don't have to take the test.
University Avenue.
Yes, Representative Zell. We have a quorum, so we're going to approve the minutes. So I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 3rd, Representative Swells. Representative Swells moves the approval of minutes for February 3rd. Is there any discussion, members? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The minutes of February 3rd are approved. It's our pleasure today to have a number of testifiers to dialogue and discuss and inform us about the Perkins Center for the Arts Education Facility. We have about 7, 8, 9 testifiers throughout the 90 minutes. We want to make sure that we have enough time for questions as well. So as you come up, please introduce yourself at the mic as you do come up, and then address your comments through the chair, through myself, and then to the members. But we will give each of you somewhere between 7 and 9 minutes to testify to say your comments. Please be aware of that. And I would like to, what I'll do is we'll call up the first testifier, and then I will also have the second testifier come up as well. So it'll be somebody's at bat and somebody's on deck. You know, like we do with when we play the baseball game, you know. So, Susan Marker is up and Pam Paulson is on deck. So if you could come up, please, and again, introduce yourself as you begin your testimony, direct your comments through the chair, and then we will roll about 7 to 9 minutes each person. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Committee Chairperson Greiling, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm sorry I didn't bring rolls either, but I'm very happy to speak about a topic for which we have great affection and knowledge, the Perkins Center for Arts Education. I'm the incoming board chairperson of the Perkins Center, and I'm anticipating a very eventful year. I start next month. I'm going to talk to you about...
Excuse me, Matt, could you state your name for the recording, please?
My name is Sue Mackert. I'm going to start by giving you a little information about the board position on some of the recommendations that we have heard. I'll talk about goals. I'll talk a little bit about audit and accountability, and then I will pass the ball to Pam Paulson. The first thing we'd like to state publicly is that we would like you to consider not repealing the Perkins Center Statute MS-129C. And the reason is that we want you to protect the $100 million investment that the state has made in arts education, primarily through the Perkins Center, in the past 24 years, and of course we'd like to continue funding. The return on this investment is evident in the state's billion-dollar arts and cultural industry, of which we are inextricably involved. The Griffith Center, because of its national reputation as a center for excellence, accountability, and the ability to manage, has seeded arts education projects, bringing an additional $20 million into the state. We ask that you, by not repealing the statute, protect the intellectual capital developed by the Griffith Center in order to continue serving students and teachers statewide, now and in the future. Arts high school students earn roughly $750,000 each year in post-secondary scholarships. Again, it's our reputation for national excellence and for student achievement. As a state agency, the Griffith Center provides equity and access for diverse students and teachers across the state, which is why we believe we are an essential state agency. Arts are essential, not elective, in a comprehensive education for all children. Everyone is talking about school improvement, reform, etc. The Griffith Center, by virtue of its 24-year history, its innovation, its research, the model it sets has been doing this on a continuous basis. Artists have very high expectations. Teachers of creative people also have very high expectations. I work in the corporate world. I have no doubt that if the Griffith Center had applied for a Malcolm Baldrige Award, we would be a leader because of what we do on the programmatic side of things. More than 10,000 Minnesota teachers rely on the Griffith Center for expertise in standards, curriculum, instruction, assessment, and in the teacher mentorship model, which has become so crucial in education. All 850,000 students in our wonderful schools throughout Minnesota must demonstrate achievement in the arts for graduation according to Minnesota statute. We're there to provide the assistance for teachers and students to help them pass that very, very important measure. The arts are another way of knowing the world, as important as other disciplines to our individual and societal health. The third point I'd like to make from the board perspective is that the Griffith Center truly does prepare students and teachers with essential 21st century skills, creativity, imagination, and collaboration. The arts truly are tied and linked to economic and workforce development. I'm reminded of a student who called recently, apologized to his teacher at Griffith, his visual arts teacher, and said, "I'm so sorry, I'm still doing art, but I hope you don't mind, I've become an engineer." And we told him that that was okay. We have a number of small business people in the state because of their arts education. Our students are advanced in technology. We have an architect in Minnesota, a graduate of the arts high school, who's designing school classrooms for help them be more conducive to learning. More than 18,000 contacts through the Griffith Center engage teachers and administrators yearly, mostly in various professional development programs. Arts education helps bridge the achievement gap in Minnesota. This is why we feel that the Griffith Center for Arts Education truly is an essential state agency. And let me talk a little bit about goals. In recognition of our huge mission and accepting that mission with really great dedication and also our responsibility to be good stewards, the Board of Directors last year began a very intensive strategic planning process. And because we serve the state of Minnesota, that strategic planning process took us to communities throughout the state to get input from them on what's needed in your community. What's needed from the Griffith Center? How can we support and help? What's needed in your other community? What's needed by artists, etc.? And out of that, we developed a very significant strategic plan. It covers the primary areas of performance management, programs and services, organizational structure, communications, people, finance, governance, and public policy. Each carries its own individual strategies, objectives, activities, responsible party designee, and each carries measurements with timelines. I want to just give you a little idea. If we take just the program and services aspects, obviously one would expect, being the Purpose Center, that one of our primary goals and objectives is to provide more arts education for students and teachers. Greater access. We are ahead of the game in many ways. We're doing online teaching. Our strategic plan calls for much more in web-based programming and teleconferencing. We have a wonderful collaborative activity with Bemidji State University, where our arts history teacher, who most higher ed institutions will tell you that our students that take arts history from this arts high school teacher are far more prepared than anyone coming in. He's superior. And he's collaborating in a program with Bemidji State University whereby they are offering arts history to their local high school students. Wonderful program. We're providing curriculum and training that deals with technology. It's huge in our strategic plan because we're all moving to so much more in technology and internet and filmmaking, audio recording, all of those activities. And a good part of our strategic plan on the programmatic side calls for developing multicultural education in the arts, addressing the heritage of all Minnesotans. We are helping our schools and our areas deal with all levels of diversity and finding new ways to connect with a very growing and changing diverse population of the state. For example, the Purpose Center has been approached by an organization that is going to establish a museum in Minnesota devoted to the works of Edward Curtis, a tremendous photographer in the early 1900s from St. Paul, who did incredible studies on American Indian populations. And there's a museum, and they have asked us to consider handling all of the educational aspects, providing materials, developing curricula, and it's a wonderfully exciting project. The intent is that art brings all cultures together. So you can see from a strategic standpoint, we have a lot of goals. We're aggressive. We've always been aggressive, and we as we would be as risk takers, tend to meet our goals, and then we establish new ones. I would be remiss in our goals, as I talked about governance and finance, if I didn't indicate to you that we had an audit a while back. And some of
Ms. Smucker, yes. You have about 2 minutes left, so if you could kind of wrap it up, that would be wonderful.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. The audit was disappointing and unacceptable. We had 17 areas of deficiency. I'll tell you that the Board of Directors responded immediately, took action, and we have brought in experts in state governance, primarily in finance and HR, to help us through that. It was not an audit of the program, and it didn't affect our delivery. It certainly affected our administrative areas, and we are doing just an extremely wonderful job in addressing all those issues. It adds to our accountability from the board that, in addition to ongoing auditing ourselves as a board, we get quarterly reports on the strategic plan. We get monthly reports on audit and various program issues. So I think that with that, you can see that we're very cognizant of being good stewards of state dollars. We're certainly cognizant of the role you play in helping the state of Minnesota, along with the country, deal with an economic crisis unlike anyone has really experienced. But we're happy to be a partner with you and find ways to help you do that while still serving as an essential state agency for Minnesota schools. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. Members, are there any questions? No comments? Seeing none, we will go to Ms. Paulson with Ms. Rube on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Pam Paulson. I am serving as the Senior Director of Policy for the Purpose Center for Arts Education. And first, I just think it is very important for us to acknowledge what a tough time this is for our state and our citizens. You have a very difficult task ahead of you. In fact, it's almost incomprehensible. So we respect you for the work that you are doing on behalf of the state of Minnesota. I don't envy you being in the positions that you are in, but I thank you for this opportunity to speak about the Perfect Center for Arts Education today. And let you know that we've been a state agency since 1985. In your packets, we will see a one-page brief history at a glance of the Perfect Center for Arts Education. I think you'll find it interesting. The Perfect Center's enabling legislation happened in 1985. I started working at the Perfect Center in 1987. And over the past 22 years, I've had the honor of helping to create the Center for Arts Education, which, as most of you know, consists of three main components. The Arts High School, which is a residential arts high school for 11th and 12th graders. It also includes a state library called the Perfect Center for Arts Education Library, and it's available to all of our own students on campus, but it's also available to any Minnesota citizen who is 18 years old and older. And of course, then we have professional development and research, which is the part of the agency that works with teachers and schools all across the state, working with as many as 800 community partners to help make sure that arts education is flourishing across the state. The vision for the Perfect Center for Arts Education is that the Perfect Center will be a recognized leader, uniquely positioned to fuse artistic passion and academic excellence, producing creative thinkers who contribute valued perspectives in society. The mission of the Perfect Center is to provide all Minnesota students the opportunity to develop and integrate their artistic and academic abilities to their highest potential. Creating the Perfect Center for Arts Education was a very big idea for former Governor Perfect when he was bringing this policy idea forward in 1984. Governor Perfect was motivated by several things. I will mention four of them to you, which I looked back and I thought how forward-thinking this administration was. First, he wanted to find a way to serve artistic students, most especially from the rural areas, because he did not think their needs were being met. Second, he believed that Minnesota needed to have a focus on the arts in order to be ready for the new global economy. Now, we talk about that today as if it just slips out of, you know, off of our tongues, but in 1984, that was a long time ago. Having spent time in Europe witnessing the importance of arts and arts education, he wanted to bring that sense of value of arts and culture to Minnesota. And fourth, he wanted to position Minnesota as a national leader in education. So these ideas were actually turned into action at the Perfect Center for Arts Education, which is both a site in Golden Valley for education excellence, and we also serve as a facilitator of educational innovation all across the state through curriculum assessment, standards implementation, all of these teachers networks we run, and a new instructional methods. In fact, Perfect Center staff have worked in most of the school districts that you represent sitting around this table this afternoon. The residential program of the Arts High School is particularly important in assuring that students from all geographic areas and socioeconomic levels can attend the Arts High School to meet our statewide mission. Governor Perfect was right. The arts are important to Minnesotans. I can give you a few facts on that. First of all, it is estimated that the impact of Minnesota's nonprofits in the arts are a $1 billion business every year. In 2004, a study was done by the University of Minnesota asking residents of our state, do you believe the arts and cultural activities help make Minnesota an attractive place to live and work? And over 91% of all respondents said yes. In another poll done by the U of M, 95% of Minnesotans believe that arts education is essential or important to the overall education of Minnesota's children. And 92% of Minnesotans believe that the arts are crucial to their quality of life. Now, these facts are interesting and useful, but I feel compelled to follow the lead of Governor Perfect, who is known as a great storyteller. Today, Daniel Pink, who's the author of A Whole New Mind, reminds us how important it is to tell our stories. In fact, he says, we are our stories. We compress years of experience, thought, and emotion into compact narratives that we convey to others and tell to ourselves. This has always been true, and we must listen to each other's stories. So I have a short story to tell you. about my middle son, who was born with an arachnoid cyst in his brain. When he was 6 months old, he needed to have brain surgery. We were told at that time that he may not walk, he may not talk, he may not live. Well, he is 24 years old today, so you know that he did learn how to walk, and believe me, he knows how to talk. But he has severe learning disabilities. And as his mother, I worried and worried and worried, how will this young man ever make it in a world that is so completely focused on reading, math, and writing? Because he will never read, do math, or do any writing. But he is finding his way to be successful. It started when he was a middle schooler in a Minneapolis public school. A group of media arts students from the arts high school came to his school and helped his class begin to learn some photography techniques. Then he was invited to be the videographer as a ninth grader for an event, a workshop, a teacher workshop that we were hosting, the Perfect Center's professional development area was hosting in Winona. At that event, he met a professional development staff member who suggested that he take a few classes in St. Paul at the photography center, which he did, and he began to believe that he had the eye of an artist. In 10th grade, he decided to apply for the arts high school. Now, I wanted my other kids to apply to the arts high school, too, but that didn't work. But I didn't press him. He wanted to do this, and he worked really, really hard to prepare his application, and he was accepted. That step alone of having to complete that application and review gave him such pride, and if you know kids with learning disabilities, you know they lack confidence. He gained a little confidence as that first step happened that he was accepted. At the arts high school, he had an exceptional special education teacher and an exceptional media arts teacher, and he found that he could speak through photographic images, not text. After many bumps along the way, high school was not easy. He did graduate from the arts high school. And after a struggle to convince him to try and get into and attend a community college, I want you to know that now he's in his second year of the digital photography program. And I can tell you, because of the way my living room, kitchen, dining room looks, he is making the world more beautiful and more interesting with his photographs. It was through the collection of experiences that the arts high school and the professional development area of the Perfect Center combined and served his needs that he found his voice as a young artist. I am thankful that he did not fall through the cracks as a student with different learning needs. Now, he's only one child. There are so many stories not dissimilar to this about arts high school graduates. And they're out in the world now, and they're making contributions to our economy and the artistic culture of our state through their imaginations, their creativity, and their innovations. And teachers throughout the state who have worked with our arts high school faculty or our professional development coordinators have learned how to help students like this learn in and through the arts. So I will leave you with just one thought. We not only want our students to learn how to make a living, we want them to learn how to make a life. Thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. And stories are perfect here at the legislature, and that was a perfect, truly heartwarming story. We have some questions, Representative Swales?
It's not a question, Mr. Chair. It's more of a comment. And first of all, Dr. Paulson, I just would like to tell you that back in 1996, when you selected me to be one of 50 arts teachers to attend the Best Practice Network, and I was a part of that for 3 years at the Arts High School, that had a profound effect on who I became as a teacher and who I am as a person. And you had a tremendous effect on me, and thank you so much. I have had students who have gone to the Arts High School. It has transformed their lives. Mm-hmm. And I truly do believe that poets should lead the nation.
Thank you, Representative Swales. We have a couple of questions. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Paulson, I could echo Representative Swales' comments. I think we all have students who have done marvelously at the Arts High School, perhaps not able to do as well in their own school. My question is, you mentioned former Governor Purpich, who came up with this idea along with his wife, Lola. He also came up with the idea later, though, of charter schools. And there's the governor's now putting this forward to not eliminate the arts high school, but to make it a charter school, which leaves us with the question of what about the outreach, what about the rural students? If you were just comparing and contrasting the idea of Governor Perfect for the arts high school, which is later brainstormed on charter schools, which we now do have two charter schools, or at least that I'm aware of, that have that focus on the arts. They don't have to go through the process to get in that your son went in, but they take all comers. But otherwise, they are arts high schools, too. I haven't visited any of them, so I'm not familiar with them, but I'm guessing you have. And I wondered if you could compare and contrast Perfect with those schools.
Ms. Austin.
Representative Greiling, you mentioned the biggest difference, and that is the fact that the charter schools do not have any mechanism for working with teachers across the state. So we would lose that whole component of the agency, which is so critical now when schools are suffering anyway. That part of the agency is a huge resource and asset to schools statewide. The second huge difference is that charter schools in our state right now do not include a residential program. And that's the piece that's most significant, because it would mean we would no longer be able to serve those rural students, or really truly be statewide. We would be limited to students who could access on a commuter basis, most likely from the metropolitan area, where, as you say, two schools already do exist. We are a specialized school. I think Governor Perfect had in his mind that when he thought we should lead the nation in education, that this would be a real flagship institution, a jewel for the state of Minnesota, to put us on the radar screen in other ways, and I will tell you, it has. I serve on several national boards. I do presentations around the country. Every place I go, I swell with pride, because this is such a phenomenal institution. No other state can believe that we have put this kind of credibility in the arts, in artistic thinking, innovation, creativity, and no wonder we're a state that has high achievers and lead the nation in so many ways. Therefore, we have put in some specialized facilities. Those probably would not be nearly as fine if you moved into a charter school status. So you'd lose your residential, you would lose your statewide work, you would not have as good a facilities. I want to tell you, however, that I have visited both of these charter schools that you mentioned, and they are serving students beautifully. They don't have the admissions requirement that we do, and I'm sure there's some effect on that, that there's some effect. But I do think Governor Perfect had a good idea for both the charter schools, meaning the local students have access, and he had a good idea for a state school where children from around the state would have access.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. Representative, we have two more students who want to ask questions, so go ahead and have a real quick short one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly will. I know how that goes. Ms. Paulson, what is the difference? You said there'd be a small difference. I understand the difference in the outreach and the housing, but you said that there's a small difference even at that, just between the schools themselves.
Ms. Paulson?
Representative Greiling, I am not sure I know what you mean by small difference. Are you between charter schools and the Perfect Center, huh? Well, for example, and again, I think how forward-looking the legislature was in 1985 when they created our enabling legislation. They created us with six art areas, and I don't believe that any other charter school has that many art areas available to students. In addition to the ones you usually know about, which are dance, music, theater, and visual arts, we include media arts and literary arts. When we started the school in 1989, we hired a teacher for media arts because we thought there would be a need, and there were no students that applied for our school in 1989. Today, the media arts program is bulging. We can't keep up with the cry for it. And I, again, don't know of any other school that has that kind of media arts program available to our new entrepreneurs. So it's that kind of curricular scope, that kind of thing. Thank you.
Representative Morgan. As I said, we've got two more questions, then we're going to need to move on. We've got six more testifiers. We want to make sure that we give everybody an opportunity. So we have Representative Morgan and Representative Biskins, and I hope that those other two folks that have questions can work those questions in later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very short and say that Representative Growling beat me to it.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Madam Chair Growling, I know somebody who could get you an invitation to one of those chartered performing arts. But I am. I do have a bias for arts high schools, but just to hide that bias a little bit, I will ask one probing question. On this bus sheet, I want to turn your attention to the third bullet, which says that the Purpose Center has seeded arts education projects, bringing in $20 million into the state. How do you quantify that? Where does that number, $20 million coming into the state, come from?
Representative Biskins, that is an accumulation over our 24-year history of grant money that we've brought into the state to for projects. For example, when the Getty was running a program called Discipline-Based Arts Education, which some of your schools may have participated in, that program brought about $7 million into our state. The Annenberg Challenge a couple of years ago was money that came to the Purpose Center in collaboration with the Minneapolis Public Schools. That brought in about $2.5 million. The McKnight Foundation granted $2 million to the Purpose Center. We have gotten a couple of million-dollar grants from the U.S. Department of Education. The Wallace Foundation has recently, with our support, contacted Minneapolis Public Schools about funding a very large arts education project, which could reach as much as $10 million in that district. So that's what we mean by that kind of money that's coming in.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson, for your testimony. And members, we're going to move on. We have six more testifiers, as I said, and we want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak today as they have come to talk about this. So we will now have Ms. Wood up with Ms. Schaefer on deck. So Ms. Wood, would you please give your name for the tape and begin your testimony? And testifiers, remember, we're trying to keep it within, you know, about 7 minutes now so that we make sure everybody gets an opportunity, please, along with questions, because the questions are important. Go ahead, Ms. Wood.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Alice Wood, and I'm the Arts High School Director of the Purpose Center for Arts Education. It's an absolute pleasure for me to be here this afternoon to talk about great education that goes on every single day. I am an educator of 30 years' experience in rural, metro areas, high schools, middle schools, do some teaching at the college level and preparing principals and other educators. And I can say without a doubt that the Purpose Center is one of the most vital, most interesting, and effective educational learning communities that I have spent time in during my career, and it's a privilege for me to be a part of that wonderful school and state agency. The Arts High School is a public school that provides excellent educational opportunities and a true unique approach to learning for all Minnesota students. Let me tell you a little bit about the Arts High School. It's a public school of choice for all Minnesota students looking to develop skills associated with high achievement in the arts. It's a school of choice with a proven record of success for its students. It is a school that integrates arts and academics to provide powerful learning experiences. And it is a school that benefits by offering students the experience in the arts that's based on academics, the basics, and comprehensive education. So what do I mean by that? In the academic areas, whether it's language arts, a world language, a social science, humanities, it's academic. In the area of a basic comprehensive education, we think about thinking skills. We look at social skills and the motivation to learn. I have never been around so many young people who are motivated every day to learn. It's almost amazing to watch. And it's comprehensive because it provides that positive school environment. And all of us who read and know about education and what makes schools work know that a positive learning environment is a key component of the success not only of the students, but all the members and stakeholders of that particular learning community. They make connections, and it makes a difference in their performance.
We're a school that has a 96% plus graduation rate year after year after year. We are a school that offers a consistent interdisciplinary arts education of the sciences and humanities that are then joined with the areas that Dr. Paulson talked about, dance, media arts, literary arts, music, visual arts, and theater. We're a school where teaching and learning experiences are authentic. We are a school that demonstrates performance-based learning and assessment that is key in the success of students and their motivation to do well. We are a school that consistently provides connections and learning where knowledge is gained through critical thinking processes. We are a school that incorporates the teaching of persistence, expression, connections, observation, envisioning, and all-important reflective self-evaluation in its teaching and learning. Those are ongoing themes in our school. And we are a school that responds to the learning style of all students. We're fortunate that we are a school where our teachers are not only professional educators, but they are teaching artists. We are a school that provides students the opportunity to develop and integrate their artistic and their academic ability to their highest potential. We are a school that helps others enhance and improve their education program. And we are a school that is an inclusive statewide resource. I caution you as you contemplate proposing that the Arts High School transition to an Arts Charter School. Charter schools are created when there is an identified void or when something is missing or not there. We are proof positive that something is there for integrated arts education. We're there. We are available to every student in the state of Minnesota. Charter schools do have a specific audience in mind. However, the Arts High School serves a broad area of interest for our students. We're looking at not only the arts areas, but the academic areas and how they are integrated. A charter school would not offer some of the things that we offer because the mission would not be as broad as we have now in our agency and in our school. And we wouldn't be able to bring students from all over our state to an integrated environment, which is an underpinning of the Arts High School. And I don't believe that it would be able to provide the in-depth access to practicing artists, which influence the instruction of our students at the Arts High School. Our students and alumni are living proof that the Arts High School provides an essential service for students in our state. You heard great stories from Pam, and let me share some of the stories of our students with you and the words that they have expressed to us time and time again. One student recalls, "Students come to the Arts High School for a reason. In my previous school, it was about getting the credit and getting out." Another stated, "I have developed so much confidence as a person and as an artist because of my experiences at the Arts High School." Another student said, "Students have higher expectations for learning that are placed on them here than in their other schools." And another student says, "If we lose the Arts High School and the Perfect Center, Minnesota will lose one of its most unique, inclusive, and nurturing educational centers in the nation, as well as the central state resource for arts education." I'd like to conclude by saying the following. In a society that has become increasingly skewed towards readily testable skills and information as a benchmark for success, the Arts High School is a place that practices and models the use of arts to restore balance and depth to our educational system. How fortunate we are as citizens to have this school in Minnesota, as it is a beacon of excellence for all of our students. I thank you for your time.
Ms. Wood, thank you for your testimony, and it was excellent, and it was right on time. Oh, thank you. We have a couple questions, comments, questions from legislators, so Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for the testifier. I know that you have an enrollment maximum of 310 students,
right.
And you serve students from 99 of the Minnesota's 134 districts and 43 or 87 counties. What percentage of that 310 students are metro students versus outstate students?
It's about 30, if I'm correct with my admin service person here, it's about 37% that are outstate.
Okay.
They come from as far as Grand Marais and Moorhead and Marshall, all over the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mr. Devlin?
Right.
Thank you. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dempsey asked my question, but I just wanted to say hello to Dr. Woog. Dr. Woog, my children had the opportunity to be under her care. She was a middle school principal, and the Perfect Center is very lucky to have her on their staff.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey. Any other questions or comments? Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. if Rudy were here today, he'd tell some stories about balancing some very serious budgets of his own. And he always did it, and he always brought along consensus, and it was always bipartisan, and it always seemed to work. Which is exactly the history with the development of the Perfect Center for the Arts. This was a bipartisan effort, as were Rudy's other education reforms, post-secondary options, open enrollment, and charter schools. It's the way he operates. But I just want the committee to know, if he were here and he had to advise us whether or not the Perfect Center for the Arts was superior to the governor's option of creating a charter school, he'd say without a doubt, try to do it. Try to keep it. And try to package together a series of budget decisions that can make this possible for this center to grow. So I just wanted to make that point clear, that would be Rudy's position on whether or not to go in the direction of the charter school, which is also a good thing.
Thank you, Representative Enbrock, for that comment. Ms. Wood, thank you. Oh, we have one more question, I guess, that Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my habit of getting here late has no, hopefully has no reflection on the importance of your school and your testimony here. And if you've already said this, just so Representative Mariani already said this. But I'm struck by the unique mission of the center. It's easy for me to think about, on the one hand, sort of a transition to being a charter school, but obviously the center was set up to be something much more comprehensive than a school, as important as that is. And you know, if I'm looking at one of the handouts one of the handouts here to the education committee that notes that there are no specialists in arts education at the Minnesota Department of Education. And of course, you know, that begs the question of why is it important to have arts education specialists at all in our state. Obviously speaks to that other part of your mission in terms of assisting arts educators in understanding and delivering high standards around arts in our K-12 settings. So I just wanted to, and if you already said this, say I already said it, I got it covered, but seems to me this is a really critical piece for us to think about here. Does the state want to have that level of professionalism and quality around the arts with K-12, not just in delivering a direct instruction, but in being able to assist and train and lift the game up for all schools across the state. And it seems to me, as I was thinking about this, that it's one thing to do that based out of theory, so you can hire like a PhD in the arts. I don't know if they have those, but to sort of theorize around this work. It's another thing to, in addition to that, to be an expert rooted in practice, rooted in day-to-day sort of interaction with students, witnessing and exercising pedagogies around the different arts. And it seems to me that's sort of the specialty, the specialness that perhaps Representative Anselm's good friend was envisioning a couple of generations back. So more than just a school, more than just a bunch of experts, both of those, but both of those rooted in some real practice happening. And so I just try to give you, you know, if you already said it, I said it, but perhaps an opportunity to expound on that particular uniqueness.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that in the words from Dr. Paulson, she expressed some of the broader things that you were talking about. But I think it's real key what you said about the actual practice and the assessment and the performance and the authenticity of what goes on. And what we have as not only professional educators, but we have those practicing teaching artists that incorporate that in their instruction all the time and are consistently looking at performance-based instruction and assessment and what's the difference and how to make that better. And then what I see in the high school are those individual teachers working with colleagues in other parts of the nation even, providing information, but also within our state, helping them create those authentic performance-based experiences and then the actual authentic assessments for students. It's a real key, it's a real difference in what we do in the delivery system of our education at the Perfect Center.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Thank you for the question. Sorry, Ms. Kennedy, we'll be real short
with that. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, it seems to me, you know, it's sort of illogical. You know, it seems to me a much more difficult thing to ask a charter school to do.
Okay.
Obviously, schools can go visit the charter school,
yes.
But that would be, I think, a much more limited type of activity in our state compared to what we've tried to set up here.
Very good
at the center.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. We're going to be quick. Can we move on? Is this for the test fire? Can we ask?
I believe so.
We're going to be quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A quick question. Since this is the Finance Committee, I think that it's just imperative that we ask this information. What is the per pupil spending at the Perfect Center?
Mr. Chairman. The per pupil cost, the figures that I have available from 2007, are $13,200.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. And then, Mr. Strom, what is the state average per pupil spending?
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, the average is about $12,000 for the last year. We have data of all fund spending, which is 2007.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ogle, would you mind just a minute? I don't want to mess up Representative Garofalo, so. Representative Garofalo.
My apologies. Thank you. You answered the question with the $13,000 per pupil figure. When we're looking at the budget sheets that we have presented to us, is that the purpose-based appropriation is $7 million annually, and we show enrollment capped at 310.
Right.
And my Minnesota math tells me that's higher than 13. It actually comes in, I'm thinking 22.5 or 23. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could explain the discrepancy. Thanks.
Mr. Wood, you want to comment on that?
Certainly. The $7 million represents the agency budget, and the high school is part of that agency budget. So the high school does not operate on a $7 million budget, but I would be happy to do so if you wanted to do that. That would be more than a wow, so that would be great. No, the high school budget is about $3
million. Thank you, Ms. Wood. We're going to move on to Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Schaefer, I apologize if I called you Ms. Schaefer before that. I didn't see the first name, I apologize. Mr. Schaefer is up, and then we're going to have Ms. Elliott on deck, please. If you'd introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Chairman and committee members, my name is Zane Schaefer, and oftentimes a Z is mistaken for a J, so it's quite all right. It's happened many times. I'm a longtime middle and high school music teacher from Annandale. Annandale is a school district of about 1,600 students, about an hour to the northwest of here. And I'm here today, first of all, to thank you for your support of arts education as we work toward making the arts an equal partner in all education in Minnesota. I'm also here to talk about what you had just briefly asked questions about, and that is to ask you to support, to continue supporting the professional development and research portion of the Perfect Center for Arts Education. I think we all agree that we do have strong arts education in Minnesota, and we all would agree that to help our students to be creative, good at creative expression and creative problem solving, and all those many things that happen when students are involved in arts programs, working through and in the arts, pays big dividends for all of us here in Minnesota. I have 3 to 4 moments of minutes of comments that I would like to share with you, and I hope somebody here will ask me a really hard question about my involvement with the professional development and research portion of the Perfect Center. I first became involved with the Perfect Center in the early 90s. The Annandale School District was looking for better ways to assess student achievement, and I was foolish enough to raise my hand one day. It actually wasn't foolish, because that was about 15 years ago, and I'm here to tell you about some of the things that have changed over those years in my classroom. I would, first of all, like to talk to you about my classroom and how it's changed because of my involvement. In a nutshell, we went with from our middle school bands and choirs and classes to activity-based things to standards-based, I think, more truly education. For example, the Perfect activities in which I was involved gave me tools to help our kids not just perform, but also to create. We asked them to improvise, arrange, and also to respond to music. Traditionally, in our school, it was perform only. The Perfect ideas helped me to help my students really get deep into all the processes of music. We asked them to select, to analyze, to interpret, to rehearse, refine, and reflect on the music in which they were involved. This is much more student-centered than I had experienced in the first part of my career. It was usually the old bald guy talking and the students doing. This was asking the students to really get involved with doing and thinking about the things that artists really do. It was really fun at the end of my experiences with the Perfect Center to watch my students conduct parent-teacher conferences. Because of what I learned and what I had helped my students experience, they could talk about their learning goals. They could talk about how those learning goals were being assessed. And they would explain to mom and dad what the criteria were to evaluate or to make judgments about that student work. I'd like to talk a little bit about how my involvement with the Perfect Center has spread beyond just my classroom. The activities in which I was involved through the Perfect Center, which were a lot of things, including arts best practice and quality teacher networks, those mostly asked us to serve as a resource or a mentor to other arts programs in our areas. I personally worked with many of the music people around Annandale, and we would talk about standards issues and how to assess those things. I was also asked to give workshops at the university at St. Cloud, and also some colleges, St. Olaf for one. Some school boards even asked me to come in and said, what is this you're working about? How about these art standards? How do we go about implementing those in our school district, and how do we assess them? I would also talk a little bit about how this affected my students, because in the end, that's what's really important. And a little story. I hope it's not too egotistical. In 2006, some of my students got together and put my name in the ring to be Music Educator of the Year. And when you hear that, you're probably thinking, well, there must have been some good concerts, some trips, some classroom experience. Yeah, I think it wasn't just that. I think these students were wise enough to know that they were involved with music experiences in our school that were really going to serve them well for a long time into the future. My name is on the plaque, but I think it should also read, earned due to involvement with the Perfect Center of Arts Education. I think there are hundreds of other students and teachers who feel the same way that I do. I don't need to tell you folks that it's a tough economy. I have a hunch, however, that as we move into the future, there are going to be even more and more difficult challenges for our arts students and our arts programs. It may be the very most important time to make sure there are support things like the professional development and research programs at the Perfect Center. I hope you can see that the Perfect involvement has truly affected me and my students as I went through my career. I hope that you can find ways to continue this support. I know that there are going to be challenges. I know that our students and teachers in the arts in Minnesota need and deserve that support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions or comments, members? Seeing none, we'll thank you very much, Mr. Schaefer. We'll move to Ms. Elliott with Ms. Petzloff Meyer on deck. Ms. Meyer, would you introduce yourself, please, for the tape?
Excuse me. Ms. Elliott. Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. My name is Roanne Elliott, and I am the Director of Curriculum and Instruction in the Mounds Youth School District. And I would like to take just a few minutes to share with you some information about the value that we have received from the programs at the Perfect Center for Arts Education from the perspective of a school district administrator. In Mounds View, we've had many of our art and music teachers who've been involved in the professional development program over a period of years. The Perfect Center has played a key role in the evolution of thinking and practice among arts educators in the Mounds View schools. And I think that the teachers in my district would forgive me for telling tales out of school. I won't tell a lot of tales, but I do have to be very candid with you about where we were a few years ago in arts education regarding standards and assessment in order to communicate the true value that we received from our participation with the Perfect Arts Center. It wasn't that many years ago in our music and art department in Mounds View where the idea of addressing standards and addressing assessment in a way that is public and collaborative and accountable was kind of a foreign concept in the arts department. And I think that teachers were doing great work in the arts, and the students were doing wonderful things, but we had not really learned much about standards. And I knew from earlier connections with the Perfect Center, that there was a great deal going on with standards and assessment through that agency. In the district, I think we were still kind of thinking about the arts as it's very personal, it's very individual. This, you know, how do you evaluate creativity? And we were coming out of that kind of a mindset. It took a state agency with the staff that was visionary and also very, very connected to what was going on in education regarding standards and assessment in our state and across the nation, and a faculty that was immersed in the day-to-day work with students to guide us out of that old paradigm and to help us to understand that arts education needs to answer the same questions that are asked of the so-called core areas of reading, math, social studies, and science, and those questions being, what is it that our students are supposed to be learning, and how will we know that they're learning it? And yes, we need to answer those questions in a way that is public and that is collaborative and with the expectation of accountability. Participating in programs on those topics at the Perfect Center for Education is what has moved us from that old paradigm to where we are today, where our arts people really are teacher leaders in the area of assessment, mainly because they understand that it's more than just a test. Because when they got busy at the art with the programs at the Purpose Center, they kind of moved away from the idea that, well, we can't test kids in the arts, it's not fair, to there are many ways to look at the value of artistic processes and products. And so they learned a great deal about performance assessment and how do you make that doable in your class, and how do you do that in band when and orchestra when those are about groups, not individuals, and all of that kind of thing. That took us a long way in our work toward assessment in our district. As a district administrator, I need to be consider all of the curriculum areas, and we need to speak with one voice, even though the areas are different. So when the arts teachers sit down with the math teachers, sit down with the science teachers, they need to all see the value of assessment and how we do it, and have a way to have a conversation about that that makes sense to them, that makes sense to our students, and that makes sense to our parents. It is, I have absolutely no doubt that one of the reasons that I think we're a leader in the metro regarding standards and assessment is because of the work that our arts people have done at the Perfect Center. What the music and art teachers that have been involved in long-range projects at the Perfect Center would say, if you ask them, what was of value to you? The high quality of the programs that were offered, they're highly relevant. At the time that we needed to know about assessment and standards, they were right there, having already done quite a lot of work in that area. Extremely helpful. The understanding of standards and quality assessment. The interaction and collaboration with arts educators from around the state. They mention that repeatedly, that it's so important for teachers to have that opportunity, particularly arts teachers, where they might be the only art teacher in their school or in their district or in their community, actually. So the opportunity to get together and see a broader picture of what arts education is outside of just our district. Discussions and assistance from the Purpose Center of Arts Education High School faculty for those real-life examples. When we talk about performance assessment, it's one thing to talk about it and to have an expert explain it to you. It's another thing to be able to sit down with a teacher who really is implementing it in their program and have a chance to talk with that person about how it really works. The use of resources from the center that Moundsview cannot afford to purchase. Teachers call it their go-to place when they need something and then they need to know how to use it. They go to the Purpose Center. That is their first call for help. And although there are other organizations and associations that provide support for arts education, arts educators, the Perfect Center is always available. You don't have to wait for a special event or a conference. You can call the Perfect Center. You can arrange to go over and see resources whenever you need to. High school staff is always available and always very helpful in talking about implementation issues and materials. And it's affordable. You know, the services are free or affordable, and so that has, that makes it very helpful for us. We also have been fortunate to be able to have high school students from the Perfect Center help with our district art show. So we are a district, one of many districts, who have used all aspects of the Perfect Center and all of the available programs. It's an agency that we've relied on and that we have learned through experience that we're going to be able to derive quality service and quality help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Elliott. Are there any questions for Ms. Elliott? Or comments? And thank you, Ms. Elliott. Oh. Representative Marianne?
John, I asked an obvious question. If it wasn't there, where would your district go? for that level of service and quality of interaction.
Ms. Elliott?
Well, to answer that question, I'm not sure. I think, you know, there, as I said, there are other organizations. So when there's an art, you know, a regional or art conference in town, we would be able to send a few teachers to that. In terms of the ongoing opportunities, you know, it's not a, when you get involved with professional development at the Purvis Center, it's not a one and done. You know, you go to a workshop and then that's it. You know, it's a well thought out over a period of time where people get together, do work together, go back to school, try some things out, come back with the same group of people. And I don't know where else we could get that, frankly.
Yep. So, yeah, a couple of questions that have come up. Other folks want to ask some questions. So, Representative Swartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Elliott, I'm just curious, when a school district is looking at massive cuts, and many school districts will be over the next biennium, what are some of the first programs that Moundsview would be looking at to cut?
Ms. Elliott?
We would be looking at reducing some of our, you know, obviously non-core type areas, such as the arts, such as some areas such as, you know, family and consumer science and, you know, those kinds of experiences that we try to keep in place because we want to offer our students a comprehensive education. I think, you know, in our district, we've maintained art as a graduation requirement and have very, very strong support from our parents and community for maintaining the arts. So whenever there's talk of reducing art programs, you know, there are a lot of questions to answer about that.
Representative Shirls, follow up?
Yes, I just want to... I can state unequivocally, I can't even talk, and I'm an English teacher over there. But I know that arts education amplifies the achievement of students in those core areas, and they complement that, and there is a whole child respect that comes from having been involved in the arts. I hope that the message that we are sending for those of us who support arts education is that we should be focusing on the whole child and that we should be focusing on the many levels of talent that children have and possess. And if the cuts are coming, I hope that they are not to the arts. I hope that they are to things that, you know, perhaps we could be funding in other ways from outside agencies like driver's ed, things like that. No offense to any driver's ed teachers in here, but we really do have to examine what do we value about education for our children. And the emphasis, the overemphasis of testing, I think is driving some of this bias against cutting things like the arts.
We have one more question, and we have some public testimony also. Some people are coming from the public that want to testify today, and that's two more folks after Ms. Fitzlaff Meyer. So we're going to take one more question, Representative Anderson, and then we're going to move on.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't think any one of us want to see the school disappear. So my question, in reference to the services that the Purvis School provides to other districts, would those services still be available if the Purvis School were a charter school?
Ms. Elliott,
I'm referring to the programs that are delivered through the professional development part of the agency. So I'm not sure how that would be possible through the charter school. I don't know. I haven't.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich, one quick one, huh?
Yeah, it is another quick one. This is a finance question, so I don't know who you want to have ask it. But, you know, everybody knows that last November we passed the constitutional amendments, and part of that three-eighths of 1 cent to the environment. And 30% of that was dedicated to the arts. And so what I'm wondering is, since this is such a statewide impact, does this school get any of that money, or will they be getting any of that money?
Do our fiscal folks know that answer? Mr. Strom, Mr. Crone?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petrick, there's not yet an indication of how the Arts and Cultural Heritage Committee is planning on funding arts programs. There's no direct link between any particular arts education program yet and that money. That will have to be done through legislative action this session.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. We're going to move to the last testifier from the Purpose Center for the Arts Education, which is Ms. Stislav Meyer, and we'll hold off for the public to testify. We'll bring you up at the end together. So you have about 5 to 7 minutes, please. So if you make sure that the public folks also get an opportunity. Would you please, describe yourself. Give us your name, please, for the tape.
My name is Nadia Stislav Meyer. I'm the Administrative Management Director for Perfect Center for Arts Education. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my colleagues so eloquently stated all the points that I would have brought up before you and talked about, so I know you'd like to move your agenda forward. I have nothing else to add.
Bless your heart. we might have a few questions, though, so... I know my colleagues, and, gentlemen.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your title.
I'm the Administrative Management Director.
Okay, I'm curious. So first of all, just as an administrative kind of a general comment, I'll testify to the statewide nature of the Perfect Center. One of my daughter's good friends in Hayesville actually attended the center here a few years back and experienced it. And as somebody whose daughter is in public school, we have music, and I think there is, I agree with certain people can think, I think that it does add to the whole person, and so there's value there. But having said that, now I want to get a little bit of business stuff. Tell me about the structure of the staffing at the Perfect Center. And I know there's different things, there's outreach and different things, there's a little different than a typical school. Is there collective bargaining? Have there ever been issues with teacher negotiations? How about the salary levels of the teachers who need to work there? Is that commensurate with other public schools? Just some of those type of things that are kind of the business things that might be different at Perfect. I know some of the charter schools have different governances. I'm curious if the agency like Perfect would help with that.
Ms. Kitzloff-Meyer, can you answer that, or do you refer that to somebody else?
I believe I can answer that.
Very good, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are a state agency, so because we are a state agency, we are then obligated to follow the collective bargaining agreements of all, as all other state agencies also participate in.
Thank you. Representative, follow up?
Sure. So do you have the collective bargaining that starts like all the other schools and January 15th deadline? And it must be different because it's a state agency, but and also the salary levels of teachers, are they commensurate with other public schools? How do you compare them?
Mr. Flockman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we collectively bargain with every other state agency that collectively bargains. I believe the contracts expire the end of June, and we collectively bargain like every other state agency does. And again, salaries are based on collective bargaining. I couldn't do a comparison for you with regard to that. If you'd like it, we could get it for you.
It is different than other school districts. You don't have the same, because it's a state agency, it's part of the pool of state employees, I assume, that is different than a school district. That's correct.
Ms. Fitzlaff-Meyer, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, our staff are in collective bargaining agreements, and therefore wages and benefits are all collectively bargained.
Ms. Paulson, did you want to weigh in on something here quickly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The teachers in the arts high school work a much longer school year than typical teachers. They're done late into June, and they come back early in August. So their salaries are
a little different because they're working an extra, at least an extra month. And I did a comparison of school districts in our area a couple of years ago and found that those teachers that have been there the longest are actually slightly under what school districts around us are paying their teachers. On the other hand, the teachers that are new and are coming in early in their career are a little higher. So that's how it played out in those neighboring school districts. And one other piece of information you should know is that our teachers have 5% of their time dedicated for the work around the state. So that gives us a little bit of a different role for those teachers as well.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. And the members, okay? Okay. Representative Anzalk, we want to get the public testifiers up here real quick. So go ahead, Representative Anzalk.
I don't want to be flippant or arrogant here, but of course, this is a state agency, and their collective bargaining agreement is not the same as it would be as if it were an independent school district. However, to the testifier, it would have been much better if you could have said, we reward our teachers on merit. And you come.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Anzalk. Thank you, Ted Carson. I'm going to call down now Ms. Laverato and Mr. Rice. Laverato and Mr. Rice are two folks that I have wanted to testify today, and it looks like we have about 6-7 minutes each. If we don't have any questions, but knowing my colleagues, there'll probably be some questions. So, you know, if you can identify yourself on the tape, please, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cindy Laverato, and I'm here as a concerned citizen and as an ex-counsel for the Perfect Center for Arts Education. I'd like to briefly address the history of the school, some bases on which your difficult policy choices might be made, and what the likely outcome of this change will be. I note that there have been several questions about the transition to the charter school, and I have some information to shed on that. I have a particular interest in the school because, as I mentioned, I was counsel for the school. I was with the Attorney General's office for about 15 years, and I actually was the attorney representing the entities that existed once the enabling legislation was passed about 24 years ago. So I advised its original director, Jim Underkoffler, and its deputy director, Barbara Martin, both of whom were visionary and absolutely wonderful people, through the first years when it was operating out of a really small, dingy little office in downtown St. Paul. And I watched and I supported them as best I could as the small staff made a transition to its new location in Golden Valley. I provided legal advice as the newly opened school began offering the first education of its kind in the state, a high school aimed at providing high-quality arts education along with high-quality academic instruction to kids from all over the state. Over the years, the school has grown into something that we as a state should be very proud of, as I think that the testimony amply demonstrates today. It's a resource for developing new innovations in arts education, both by sending staff out into the state and by inviting students to come to the center from around the state. They often come to the school because they don't have those opportunities available to them in their home district. Watching the school from the vantage point of legal counsel, I can tell you that in my experience, the people and the system and the resources in that school always met a very high standard of accountability and excellence. It was not the kind of agency liability that some other agencies, in my experience, have been. This school was exemplary. I heard that there were some legislative things that the school has taken most recently, but let me give you a little perspective on that from my perception. This is a school that's subject to three different standards, three different sets of accountability standards. First, state, because it's a state agency, and all of the statutes and rules will go along with that. And then second, as a school district, or not district, but as a school, it has to come into compliance with all of the state and rules and regulations on schools. And then, on top of that, there's a whole myriad of federal laws and rules and case law that the school has to come into compliance with. So the fact that this school has been around and operating for as long as it has, with maybe 16 legislative dings, I think speaks greatly to its integrity and in its capacity for excellence. As I understand it, the governor's budget proposal would slash the center's $7 million annual budget by $2.2 million during the 2010-2011 school year. That's about, if my Iowa math serves me, about one-third of its next year's appropriation. and by about $9 million over the following 2 years, which, if, again, if my math is correct, I think that's about half of the remaining funding for the center. And then presumably the center is going to somehow magically, I'm sorry if I sound a little bit cynical, but I am, somehow transition to a charter school, which is a topic that I'm going to address briefly at the end of my remarks. I'd like to ask the committee, as respectfully as I possibly can, to really carefully consider how this policy choice is going to be made. Is it going to be made because it is a good, cost-effective decision in terms of the other options available, or is it because in these times of tight budget cuts, it's an easy target? To me, it seems like it's the latter and not the former. I hope that you, as policymakers, will not simply be reacting to the need to make budget cuts, but in that process we'll also be asking for some really good information about maybe some of the following. What's the evidence that making these cuts in the short term or the long term will actually save money? Staff and teachers will be laid off. We're going to be losing those grant resources that were described, $20 million in grants coming into the state. That's a significant source of revenue for the state. Business that results from commerce generated by the school in terms of the outreach and in terms of the students and families coming to and from the Twin Cities. And let's not forget the substantial investment that the state has made in this institution over the last 24 years. That's going to be gone. What are the proven benefits of this program in terms of educational outcomes, opportunities, and benefits provided to the students who have graduated, the schools who have received them, and the businesses who have employed them? You've heard an awful lot of testimony in that regard today. A lot of proven benefits of that program. Are the costs going to be saved, that are going to be saved, going to outweigh those proven benefits? Are there other unproven educational policy initiatives that might be eliminated instead? One comes to mind, I think Q's in the title, in which the state has invested heavily, but for which, as the Legislative Auditor's Office has said only this past week, there's no evidence of real benefit in terms of student achievement, opportunity, or improved commerce. I'll just say that I do a little reading and studying around that issue, and I feel very passionately, and none of you care because it's just me, but I feel very passionately that QCOMP is a huge, huge, huge waste of state resources. It's not going to achieve what it's claimed to achieve. And let's also understand that arts education has taken a terrible hit in K-12 education over the past several years. And as you've heard, the outreach services at Purpich help fill those gaps left by the difficult choices and program elimination that's already happened at the local level. That move, this move would only compound cuts that have already been made around the state. So what is the impact of the policy proposal being made by the governor? Will this school simply transition to a charter school? I've had a little bit of experience with charter schools in my time, and with all due respect, I think this claim is just a cover for the reality, which is that the school is an opportunity for students from all over the state will simply no longer exist. Charter schools are different. They're community-based, they're community-driven, they have no tax base, unlike school districts. Startup financing is minimal. They cannot own their own buildings. They often operate in facilities that districts have abandoned, sometimes worse. My son, Connor Rice, who's here today as well, actually goes to one of those two high school charter schools, and he can tell you about the facilities as compared to some of the other facilities. Wonderful things go on there, but it's really in spite of the facilities. The wonderful opportunities available to school will be gone, and probably even to those who live close enough to attend. So the state's substantial investment over the last 24 years will be lost. That cannot be cost-effective. I teach policy courses at the University of St. Thomas, so forgive me if I sound like I'm preaching to you. And in preparation for a course I'm teaching this weekend, I have been rereading Adam Smith. I don't have a life. Although a proponent of free market economics, Smith realized that the more civilized a society became, the more its government would cost. Education, defense, and social services in a highly complex industrialized society are not cheap. In my view, the true measure of the value of a society is not how much we save individuals or businesses in taxes, but the quality of the institutions that we provide for our citizens. I'm almost done.
Okay.
I promise I'll talk real fast. The reality is that this is a school with a long tradition of promoting education, and in particular arts education. And I think in a time of budget cutting, it would be really foolhardy to target this institution. And I would urge you to reject this portion of the governor's proposed budget.
Thank you. And we're going to relate to Mr. Rice and Mr. Mr. and Mr. Rice. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Brian Rice. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis. I'm also a lobbyist, but I'm here today as the father of Connor Rice and the ex-husband of Ms. Lavorato.
It's a really strong policy issue when the two
right. The last time we testified, we were not on the same side of the last great governor that this state had was Rudy Perfect, and that's why this school is here. And I started lobbying in 1982 at the end of the Cui administration, as Representative Anzuff said. Governor Perfect faced a budget challenge that is on the magnitude of the one you're having. This one may be worse, and I fully appreciate that. But Perfect didn't retreat, he advanced. He advanced this state. He called it the brain power state. And that vision sustained this state for a long time, but it's been running on empty for the last three administrations. And this committee, if you don't stop it, you're the last line of defense for this school. If you don't stop it, no one will. And I know that's tough. I know you have colleagues who want to cut in education, and you need to cut in other areas. But I just tell you, it would be a tragedy. You talked about a 24-year investment. The state's probably got $100 million into this school. I'm a product of Catholic education. I spent 16 years at schools. I went to kindergarten and public school and law school at the University of Minnesota. But in between, I was educated by the Christian Brothers and the Fathers of the Holy Cross at Notre Dame. And when a LaSalle school starts up, they don't wait for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. They're in it for 100 years. If they make a commitment, the model of the Christian Brothers is to know Christ through education. And if you're going to make that commitment to education, you better stick with it. And that means in good times and bad times and recessions, depressions, and everything else. And you have a gem here with the perfect school. It would be totally foolish to do it. I went to the University of Notre Dame. They've been around for almost 200 years now. And they've been able to kind of maintain their brand. When I went to Notre Dame was like the 19th ranked school in the U.S. News and World Report. The University of Minnesota was 40th. Today, the U on that same ranking is 70th, and Notre Dame still in the top 20. When I went to the law school at the U, it was 12th. I was accepted at Columbia and Georgetown. Columbia was 7th, and Georgetown was 14th. Today, those schools are still where they're at, but the University of Minnesota Law School has slid to 22nd. Because this state didn't support education in the way it needed to. And why is that important? I'm not being egotistical. The university, when I got out of school, was a great investment. It was cheap. It was highly ranked. And as a smart kid from Minnesota, I wanted to come back and stay here. And there are a lot of other smart kids from other states that came here and stayed here. If you're a kid now looking at that choice, I don't know that you'd do it again. It's not as highly ranked. We're not getting the smart kids from other states, the brain power state, and we're letting go. And this is a gem, and you really need to protect that. And I think you as an institution, as the legislature, need to look at that perspective. You made the investment. This is not the time to sell. As Governor Perfect knew, this is the time to buy, and to buy with everything that you have. Because you're not going to see the payoff for this school for a long time. I mean, the kids that are there are way younger than me that went to this school. The oldest is probably in their 30s, you really need to look at that. And I know that the whole governor's savings on this is $2.5 billion. That's not, and when your budget is big, it's $14.5 billion for the biennium. I know you have problems. I talked to Representative Griley. I know the task ahead of you is really difficult in terms of making cuts and decisions. But what this amounts to isn't even the margin between Franken and Coleman in your budget in this perfect sense. I mean, it isn't. It's a rounding error when you get right down to it in terms of how you figure out. But the principle is hugely, hugely important. And the principle is this kid, Exhibit A. This is what the hearing's about. And I want to introduce them on a couple levels. My father's lived in this body for 26 years. Representative Jim Rice, but, and he didn't talk about this much, but my grandfather, Jerome James Rice was worked for the House of Representatives for 6 sessions starting in 1907. He was a clerk for a committee, and he was the second assistant chief, which was back then called the enrolling clerk.
Mr. Rice, can you wrap it up?
I will.
My colleagues will skin me if I don't know.
I bet they will, and I've been lucky to lobby at this place for a long time, and so I want to introduce Connor James Rice to this institution.
Welcome, Connor. Thank you.
Yes. I attend the Main Street School for Performing Arts in Hopkins. It is a chartered school. And I can speak to the quality of education that I see there. There is a very high quality of education there. However, the funding that our school receives is simply not enough to, you know, run a school that is good. We have to work with books that are outdated. We have to work with not having enough textbooks. We have to share so many books. We barely have money to get by. We're continually cutting the amount of money that we spend for our lease in the building that we are in. And our facilities just simply aren't good. We don't have a place to perform. We have to perform at the Hopkins Center for, it's just, we don't have enough to get by. And I think it's perfect would have make the transition into a charter school, they would be in the same situation as my school.
Thank you, Connor.
If I could make one point in that, I was a little bit leery about sending this kid to an arts high school. You know, these kids are different. You know, they are. I go in there and I said, got it, I land on the aisle of misfit toys or something. But he went there and he found his tribe. He's worked with these kids. He's engaged. There's a lot of great kids at that school. But it is more general. And perfect, I think, is, from what I've observed, more specific. And there are a lot of really good schools at Main Street.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Meeting is adjourned.